Volume 3, Villains. Earth turning in space, then Peter sprinting through a moonlit city street while looking over his shoulder. He pushes open a corrugated door and slams it shut while a shadowy figure holding a gun watches him. Manhattan, New York. 4 years in the future.
Come on, Claire. It's me. Put down the gun.
Can't. It ends here.
No, 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 wait, wait! I'm going back to the day they all found out.
It's too late.
It isn't. Think about it, Claire. It wouldn't be like this if they'd never known about us. Huh? No camps. No experiments. No hiding underground, hunted like this. All these powers, it's gonna destroy everything.
I made peace with that a long time ago. You never did.
She steps forward.
What happened to you, Claire? How did you get to this place?
I'm different, remember? Special.
I can fix all of this, everything, please.
He nods gently as future Claire narrows her eyes.
I'm sorry, Peter. I always loved you.
Future Peter closes his eyes as the bullet leaves the gun, freezing time. He walks to future Claire's side and takes the weapon from her hand. When time restarts, he and the gun have disappeared. Future Claire jumps and looks around. Future Peter teleports to an office cupboard in the present day. Opening the door, he looks around. Unseen by some people in a room a short distance away, he grabs a cap and a coat from a stand. Chapter 1, The Second Coming. Future Peter walks quietly along a corridor to a room where Nathan's at a lectern giving a speech with Peter next to him.
But I'm not afraid anymore. I'm here to tell you the truth. I have the ability.
Quickly raising future Claire's gun, future Peter shoots his brother in the chest.
Get an ambulance in here now!
Oh, get back!
Stay on. Stay with him.
Future Peter returns to the cupboard.
Don't leave him.
He pushes the gun behind a box, then walks out again. Peter runs around the corner, spotting his future self walking into the gents. Matt quickly follows, with two police officers behind him.
Where is he?
I lost him.
Did you get a good look at him?
No. No.
Heroes. Created by Tim Kring. A TV news report.
Police currently have no leads as to the cause of the shooting, and an investigation is underway to locate the gunman. The building has been sealed off, and authorities are interviewing everyone present. The status of his condition at this time...
Claire scrambles over her bed and grabs her phone.
...when he was hit with two bullets to the chest.
Peter's in the ambulance.
Hello?
Peter? Me.
Claire?
Is he...
Oh, it's bad.
We're gonna get him to the hospital.
I should be there. I can help.
No, he needs to get in surgery.
But my blood...
Claire, you're in California.
He needs to be in the hospital right now. Just... I'll call you as soon as I know anything.
Police currently have no leads as to the cause of the shooting, and an investigation...
Medics rush Nathan through the hospital doors. Pursued by a news crew, Nathan's transferred from a trolley to a bed.
He was down for 4 minutes.
Hang two units of blood, charge the paddles. This is a restricted area.
I'm his brother.
I'm sorry.
Peter's ushered out.
Is he gonna make it?
Let's go!
Paddles ready. Here you go.
Clear!
He watches as the doctor prepares to shock Nathan again. Turning away from the glass door, Peter walks towards a wall. then turns and sits on the floor. He's staring ahead, deep in thought, when the doctor emerges from the recess room. Peter rises to his feet and looks at him expectantly.
I'm sorry.
As the doctor walks away, Peter goes into Nathan's room. His pale body's lying on the table, his chest covered in blood. Peter strokes Nathan's hair while looking down at him somberly.
Should have met it this way.
Leaning over, Peter kisses Nathan's forehead, then touches his brother's shoulder. Nathan suddenly springs up with a deep breath and looks at Peter. Hiro is sitting at a desk in a large private office. Squeezing his eyes shut, he wills the hands of his desk clock backwards, then forwards again. He repeats this a few times, then sits back in his chair. Yamagata Industries, Tokyo, Japan. Ando knocks, then enters.
Sacho!
You busy, sir?
Stop calling me sir. Just because I'm in his office doesn't mean I'm becoming my father.
I can't help it. I'm intimidated.
Intimidated? Why?
Your power. Look at you. You own 51% of the company now. A fleet of corporate jets.
I can teleport, remember?
And 250 million in cash.
A temporary setback. I have no interest in money.
You can always give it to me. I'm extremely interested in money.
Money won't show me my destiny. I saved the world. Twice. Now look at me. A man without a quest. All I do is sit here bored. It's not like destiny's going to come knocking at my door.
A man comes in and bows. While Ando watches, Hiro walks over to the man, who gives him something, then leaves. What is it?
My father's lawyer. He gave me this.
What is it?
Seems my father recorded a DVD message to me before he died. He said it was about my destiny.
Claire's checking her phone while half watching the TV. She looks thoughtful as Mr. Muggles sits on her lap. Later, Claire's packing a holdall. She zips it up and opens her door to find Sila standing behind it.
Hello, Claire. I bet you've been wondering where I've been since you saw me last, huh? Let's just say I took a little detour from my career path, spent a little time south of the border, but it's all behind me now, like a long night after a bad taco.
I saw Hiro Nakamura kill you. I was there.
And yet here I am, fully recovered. Well, not fully. That's actually why I've come.
What do you want from me?
Same thing I did last time I came for you. I want what you have, Claire. I want your power.
Claire grabs a cheerleading trophy and hits Sila in the face. He falls to the floor and closes his eyes. Claire runs down the stairs to the front door, but it slams shut when she opens it. She tugs hard at the handle desperately, but the door won't budge. In the hall, the doors and windows slam shut around her, and the light in the ceiling turns on, then explodes. In the kitchen, Claire grabs a phone, listens for a dial tone, but can only hear interference. She pulls a knife from a block and holds it above her shoulder with the blade forwards. Hearing the footsteps, Claire edges into another room. The closed window shutters have darkened the house. Claire sees nothing but her shadow, so walks backwards through to the kitchen. A shadowy figure walks past her back, but when Claire looks in the direction it went, there's nothing there. Claire walks past a glass-fronted cabinet into the hall without noticing Sila's reflection behind her. With the knife still raised, Claire edges forward, followed closely by Syla. Looking up, she slowly lowers the knife, then swings around, lashing out at him. As Syla falls to the floor, Claire dashes around a corner into a cupboard. In the hall, he gets up again. Inside the cupboard, Claire picks up some dog leashes and wraps them around the cupboard handles while Syla heads towards it. He pulls at the handles. At Mohinder's place, the knob on the front door is turning from side to side. Holding a cricket bat up over her shoulder, Maya's watching it fearfully.
Oh my God!
Take Maya!
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I thought it was Syla coming back. I saw the door not moving.
Damn key, it's bent.
How did it go with Molly?
Harder than I'd wished for. Flight attendant said they'd look after her until she landed, but I just hope I did the right thing.
She'll be safe now. No one's gonna find her there. And now we can finally start on my examination.
Yeah, about that. I know I promised you, Maya, but I really am in no position to help you.
What do you mean?
I mean, I've had a dead end with my research. There's nothing left for me to do here. I'm packing up my things and I'm going home to India.
I don't understand.
After all this time, I found nothing that leads me to believe I can take these powers away.
But I came all the way from South America to find you. For a cure.
And I'm sorry, but I can't help you.
But you haven't even tried. It's not fair. You can't do this to me. You have to try, Maya.
Mohinder watches her eyes turn black, then normal again.
I'm sorry. I should go now.
No, wait. Tell me what just happened. When you got upset, angry, your ability manifested. Is it always that way?
Yes. When I'm scared or mad, it just happens.
And to make it stop?
I just calm down somehow.
Like some kind of sympathetic nervous system response. There's a mind-body connection. The neuropathways that control...
What are you talking about?
Fight or flight. The adrenal glands, they control our stress levels. My father had it all wrong. For years, he'd been working on a formula, trying to isolate the gene for these abilities. It's all here. All this time, I've been trying to make sense of it, but he was looking in the wrong place. These abilities don't originate in the blood. They're produced from adrenaline.
He searches in his desk.
All I have to do is make you mad again.
Hiro plays the DVD.
Hiro.
Hiro, if you're watching this, then I am dead. I have left you my fortune. But more important, I leave you with a sacred duty. You are now to be the sentinel of a dangerous secret. A secret? One that you must keep, as I and my father before had done. It resides in my personal safe. In the wrong hands, this secret will destroy the world. So it is your task now, your sacred duty, to never open the safe.
Well, you said you wanted a quest. Never open the safe.
I don't want to be a sentinel. I want to be a hero.
But you're protecting a dangerous secret that would destroy the world.
I'm doing nothing.
What are you looking for?
A way into the safe. There must be a button.
Kaito Nakamura was like a father to me. You will do his name a great dishonor.
I was nobody in my father's eyes until I proved I was my own man. I can't go back to being nobody. My destiny, your destiny, Ando, is inside that safe.
Hiro looks inside a box on his desk and finds an electronic button inside. He presses it and the front of the safe opens. Hiro jogs over to the safe excitedly. Why would your thumbprint work? He doesn't want you to open it.
Or maybe he does.
Inside, an envelope on a pedestal.
Press play.
They start the DVD.
I asked you not to open the safe, but now that you have, beware. There are those who will stop at nothing to get this half of the formula.
Formula?
Should it fall into the wrong hands, there is only one hope, a chosen one among you who carries the purity of blood, the light to safeguard against the darkness. Do you understand?
No, not really.
So guard this half of the formula with your life. The fate of the world depends on it. Godspeed, my son.
Hiro looks down at the envelope, then quickly opens it. Are you sure you should? Inside, there's a torn piece of paper with a handwritten formula on it.
I knew I should have paid more attention in chemistry class.
Something rushes past and snatches the formula from Hiro's hand. He freezes time to see a trail floating in the office in midair. Hiro pushes his hand through the mysterious trail, then walks underneath some flowers that are about to fall to the floor. He walks slowly through to reception, where papers have been blown off the desk. Walking through to another office, past some still employees, Hiro sees the front of the trail, where a woman with short platinum blonde hair, a red top and black shorts, is poised mid-stride. He looks closely at her face, then her eyes turn towards him.
How are you doing this? Are you a speedster too?
Speedster? No, I'm Hiro Nakamura. I stopped time.
I got news. You don't stop it completely, or we're not having this conversation.
So, you move fast?
Not fast. I move really fast.
Well, you stole something from me.
You mean this? This whole time-stopping thing, how does it work exactly? I mean, if you chase me to Bangkok, what time stay frozen here in Tokyo?
I don't know.
Well, something to think about when you get back on your feet.
But I am on my feet.
Time restarts.
Gotta go.
Papers fly up as she speeds off. Inside the cupboard, future Peter's feeling behind the box for the gun.
Peter. You looking for this?
Hey. Yeah, I was just...
What?
It's pretty incredible, huh? Nathan's recovery. So the bullets went straight through him. Barely any damage, like his body had already healed inside.
How'd you know where to find the gun, Peter?
I just figured there weren't many places for him to stash it.
And what makes you think he stashed it?
They stare at each other intently. Future Peter tilts his head to one side. Matt flinches.
You had to go and be the detective, didn't you, Matt?
Matt's stunned as Peter morphs into his future self.
How did you...
I came from the future. To stop Nathan from telling the world about us, I had to. It's where it all begins.
The future.
Now that you know, you can't be here.
Future Peter holds up his palm and Matt disappears. Future Peter opens the cupboard door and strides out confidently while morphing back into his present-day guise. In a hospital bed, Nathan grabs his chest and winces before opening his eyes. Sitting up a little, he looks over to the door and sees a suit hanging on the back with shoes below it. Unsettled, Nathan looks down, then back up at the suit. As his present-day self, future Peter walks into the hospital. He speaks to a nurse who directs him to Nathan's room. Feeling inside his jacket, he enters and finds Nathan's bed empty. The hangers on the back of the door have nothing on them.
Petrelli's miraculous recovery has this hospital staff completely baffled.
His condition has been upgraded to stable, and he is resting comfortably. The shocking footage that has been played over and over on news outlets and YouTube has created a...
That's him.
Nathan walks out of the entrance behind the reporter, who follows him into the chapel. Inside, Nathan stares up at the large wooden cross at the front of the dimly lit room. The reporter peers in, watching Nathan, as he says to a woman praying, "I saw God today." Outside, future Peter sees the camerawoman and the sound man standing by the chapel.
"I was dead and he gave me another chance. But now I know the reason I'm here. To do great things. To do his bidding."
"Mr. Petrelli, earlier today you were about to make a statement. You had a message to deliver. Are you ready to do that now?"
Behind a pillar, future Peter readies his gun.
"God is the only one with a message. It's a message of hope and urgency, because he's not going to wait much longer. His message is a simple one. We're all connected. Our hopes, our dreams, our children's future, reflecting back in each other's eyes. We fight our own personal battles, but we know we're not alone. Because only together can we make our short time on this planet mean something. Only together can we be the stewards of our own destiny. And we hold in our collective hearts one noble goal. Save ourselves. Save the world."
Nathan returns to look at the cross, then kneels down. Future Peter walks away. Now next to Nathan, future Peter puts his hand on his brother's shoulder as he falls to the floor. At Mohinder's.
"I've separated the tyrosine and combined that with the dopamines produced by your adrenals."
"And what now?"
"We wait a few seconds and see if the enzyme's attached to the cortisol." "You're very brave to have found me the way you did."
"There was no other choice."
"I imagine that it must be very unsettling to have these abilities. But I have also imagined many times the exhilaration one must feel to know such power, to feel so special."
He realizes he's touched her arm a little too long. They awkwardly look back at his laptop.
"It worked."
"What have you done?"
"What my father never could. I've isolated the genetic building blocks of these abilities. I found a source. I have to get to the loft, to my lab. There's a centrifuge there. I have to verify and duplicate these results. This is incredible."
"I don't understand. What have you found?"
"The contents of this single syringe could give powers to anyone."
"Give powers?"
"And with the added component of adrenaline, the effects would be instantaneous."
Maya watches him go worriedly. At Claire's, she's still in the cupboard, now sitting on the floor. She holds up the knife, gritting her teeth, as Sila rattles the door. He peers through the slats, then moves away.
"I know you're scared. I would be too, all alone in this house with someone like me. A man you barely know. It isn't exactly a fair fight, I admit, but I don't want to fight you, Claire. I just want what you have. You see, I lost everything that made me special."
Sila looks inside a box.
"Lost, but now found."
He finds several files.
"There's a whole shopping list of abilities right here. But I'm going to start with the best. And once I have yours..."
She stabs him in the chest and runs. Using telekinesis, Sila throws Claire against a wall, then twists her around to face him. Moving his index finger horizontally, he cuts a line along Claire's forehead. Later, Claire's twitching on a table with her scalp removed. Silas sitting behind her head, looking at her brain.
What are you doing to me?
Looking for answers before I bleed to death.
Honey, I'm looking for answers to you. Why don't I feel anything?
No nerve endings. An amazing bit of machinery, this. And how much of it do we actually use? 10%, maybe 20? Imagine the answers we'd have with 100%.
Why is there evil? How many angels can dance on the head of a pin? How do we make love stay? All these answers, they're all right here.
Are you gonna eat it?
Eat your brain. Claire, that's disgusting.
Feeling it with his finger, Sila looks closely at a part of the brain.
There it is.
Claire's head moves as he pulls a piece out. Sila wipes his hands, then rises to his feet. He grabs the handle of the knife with both hands, and gritting his teeth, he gradually pulls it out of his chest. Sila holds the knife up in front of him, then throws it to the floor. Pulling open the tear in his shirt, he watches the wound heal up instantly. With a satisfied look, he steps over to the table and picks up the file, passing Claire's discarded scalp lying on the floor. Sila turns to look at her blank expression, then picks up the scalp and places it back on her head. He smiles and walks away as Claire blinks, her wound healing. She sits up, watching Sila move towards the door.
Wait. What about me? Aren't you gonna kill me?
Poor girl. There's so much about yourself you don't even understand. Your brain is not like the others, Claire. You are not like the others. You're different. You're special. And I couldn't kill you even if I wanted to. You can never die. And now I guess neither can I.
Claire looks confused as Sila walks out. At Mohinder's lab, he looks through a microscope before writing down some notes. Maya enters.
I ran two samples in the centrifuge. The enzymes held both times.
You need to destroy that, Dr. Suresh.
What? What are you talking about?
It's like you said. It's against the laws of nature.
No. Maya, this is a discovery of world-changing proportions. The possibilities for the advancement of science, for our entire species. Ordinary people will
be... We have my ability.
No, no. Each individual's blood chemistry is unique, like fingerprints. These abilities could manifest in an infinite number of ways.
But they can still end up terrible, like mine.
Well, they could be wonderful. Flight, telepathy, super strength. Of course, it would have to be perfected. There'll be research and development, clinical trials.
But in the wrong hands,
in the wrong hands now, Maya. An entire clandestine company dedicated to hiding it from the rest of the world.
Yes, because of people like me. People like Sila.
Exactly. Sila killed my father. If I had had a legitimate chance to inject myself with this, to give myself a power, then perhaps I could have stopped that. That's my point.
You would actually inject yourself with that?
There are quantum leaps in science that one dreams of being a part of. This is one of them. I don't see why you don't understand that.
I don't see why anyone would want these abilities. It's a curse.
She She walks close to him.
Can what's in that syringe cure me or not?
He looks around sheepishly.
Then it's evil, and you should destroy it for the sake of all of us.
Maya walks off while Mohinder considers. Back in a hospital bed, Nathan's lying asleep while future Peter watches him. Nathan wakes and looks at Peter.
Am I still here?
Yeah.
Future Peter holds up a paper.
Touched by God. That's what you said in the chapel.
Nathan takes it.
I thought I dreamed that. It's true, Pete. He saved me. He came for me. He brought me back.
You've seen what people like us can do, Nathan. Things no one in the world can. I came back from the dead. You had third-degree burns over half your body.
Who's to say this isn't the hand of God? All of us with these powers. Did you ever stop and think about it, Pete? We could be angels. All here to do God's bidding.
Future Peter looks at him moodily.
Telling the world about us.
Well, we couldn't be angels. Everyone knew, now could we?
Nathan falls asleep, with future Peter staring at his face intently. Getting up off his brother's bed, future Peter looks down thoughtfully.
I don't expect you to understand what I did to you, but I hope someday you'll forgive me.
He leans over Nathan and kisses his forehead before leaving. From behind a curtain.
Life is funny, isn't it, Nathan?
Linda, you're the one who healed me.
There's a divinity that shapes our ends. Rough hew them how we will. It seems you and I are meant for great things, Nathan. Great things indeed.
The extraordinary claim of divine intervention has captured the imagination of the entire country, and nowhere is it being greeted with greater interest than by the leaders of the religious community. In short, the elected...
A middle-aged man does up his tie while watching the TV.
Tracy, baby. For political redemption. I think we found our guy.
Isn't that my job, Governor?
It's a message of hope.
Nikki enters in a silk corset and robe.
What's his name?
Petrelli. Nathan Petrelli.
Our hopes, our dreams, our children's futures.
They watch the TV.
I like him.
In a barren, grassy landscape, Matt's lying unconscious on the ground. A large scorpion is crawling across his cheek. He wakes and knocks the creature off.
No!
He twists and turns, looking all around him.
Is there anybody here?
With a helpless expression, Matt begins walking. Nighttime in Tokyo.
It was like she was moving at the speed of sound. She must have known that I was going to open that safe. What was so important on that paper?
I told you not to open it.
And what was my father talking about? The light?
Never mind that. What about the world being destroyed? If that formula falls into the wrong hands, you have to go back to the past and ask your father...
I can't. I'm never going to the past again. You saw what happened last time. I'll go to the future.
The future?
To see for myself. If the world is going to be destroyed, I need to see how, so we can stop it.
But what if you get stuck, or...
Hiro disappears. In the future. Still in Tokyo, Hiro looks up at future Ando and his future self arguing on a balcony.
Hiro, give me the formula.
No,
You betrayed me. You're wrong. Future Hero pulls out a samurai sword, but Future Ando strikes him with red lightning from his hands. He picks the formula up from Future Hero's lifeless body and puts it in his pocket before walking away. Hero watches in horror, then runs in the opposite direction to everyone else. In front of him, the city's bright lights go out as a giant dark cloud envelopes the buildings ahead. Skyscrapers collapse in flames and cars are flung up from the road. Squeezing his eyes, Hero returns to the present day, and nearby, Ando spots him.
Hero!
Hero looks at Ando open-mouthed as his friend walks over to him quickly. Well?
We gotta find that formula.
Ando smiles and nods at him. Hero nods back. At a dock at night, Mohinder is overlooking some boats with the syringe in his hand. He steps over to the edge of the quay, then holds the syringe over the water, staring at it. Moments later, he rolls up his sleeve, then plunges the needle into his forearm. He clenches his fist, then stretches out his fingers. Suddenly, he appears to convulse on the spot before falling to the ground. Nathan's asleep in his hospital bed. His mother, Angela, is standing next to him, wearing a black suit. She turns when she hears Future Peter walking along the corridor. He stands in the doorway, then goes. Outside the room, Angela looks around the corner to see Future Peter leaning casually against a wall.
What have you done with Peter?
He looks curious.
Who do you think you inherited your first ability from? Your dreams. I dreamed you'd come. I saw what you'd do. Shooting your own brother, for God's sake.
I had to. It was Nathan who set everything in motion. The powers, the greed, the war.
Who are you to play God?
You can see the future. Then you know that that formula that you and your friends tried to bury, it gets out and it destroys everything.
The only future I've ever seen is the one caused by you.
Nathan didn't die. And now he doesn't have to.
It doesn't matter. Because by shooting him, you screwed up everything. Something different happens now, and it's all because of you. So why don't you go back to where you came from? You understand? Now. What did you do with my son?
Don't worry. I put him someplace safe.
This is a mistake! I'm not supposed to be here! I'm not who you think I am! I'm Peter Petrelli! You've got to help me! I'm Peter Petrelli!
Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the Falcon cannot hear the Falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world.
I'm Peter Petrelli!
Please get me out of here!
The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere, the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere, in sands of the desert, a shape with lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs while all about it real shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. And what rough beast! Its hour come round at last. Slouches towards Bethlehem to be be born.
At the dock, two men approach Mohinder.
Dude's got some money here somewhere.
Give me your money. I said give me your money.
Man, waste him.
Mohinder grabs the robber's gun, bends it in his hand, and throws it to the ground. Jumping athletically to his feet, he grabs his accomplice and hurls him through the air. As the thugs run away, Mohinder looks at his hands, his fingers outstretched. He runs a short distance, then stops, breathing heavily, and takes another look at his hands with disbelief. A large painting of the world shattering and its orange molten core bursting out adorns a wall next to him. To be continued.